It's time for the Rink Rats with your hosts, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. Man, it's been a long time.
It has.
It's felt like forever. But then again, when you're traveling back and forth and, getting on planes at 5 o'clock in the morning and all of your Uber drivers are driving really small Priuses and you have to sit in the front because you don't want to take your eyes off of what they're doing, and it just freaks you out to be in a car driven by a complete stranger at 11:30 at night leaving the SAP Center. Time seems to just warp and change, and it took me a long time to kind of recover from this entire series.
Yeah, I've traveled to all the games, LA, San Jose, and in LA it felt like I was like, no big deal. But that's because it was, yeah. I didn't realize, like, the sweep, and then we had that week off. Like, now it's really hitting me.
Especially, it's only going to get worse.
Especially the second trip back, because, like, we finally get back from San Jose after 4 nights, whatever, 4 days,
yep.
2 games. And when it really hit me was when I'm like, oh, I have, like, 2 days before I'm flying back up to San Jose. Like, and then when I went back up there for game five, right? Game six. See, this is
like
what's
I said,
happening.
The time continuum is all messed up for you.
So when I went back up there for game six, I didn't even rent a hotel room. Yeah. I flew up early in the morning, 5 a.m.
Right.
Get to San Jose, flew to San Francisco, drive down to San Jose, spent the whole day and all night covering the game. After the game, we went for a dinner and celebratory, whatever, like all the media, the series is over, let's go get something to eat.
Who did you sit next to?
I sat next to,
was it Carp?
No, you're going to put me on the spot. I don't remember the guy's name. I can't pronounce it. He's from Montreal.
Oh, that's okay. You don't need to
anyways,
pronounce it.
Some guy from Montreal with a really French name.
Yeah.
I sat next to him and Nick Kostanica from NHL.
Yeah, you're lucky. I was across from Kostanica on the plane ride back from San Jose after game four.
Yeah, we had two tables. My table was me, the guy from Montreal, Kostanica and Lisa from NHL.
Oh yeah, Dylan. So you were in good company.
And then the other table was Ed Graney, Steve Karp, Dave Shane, and Adam Hill.
So the review journal.
Yeah,
then. They had
the
their
army,
own table.
The
they
army.
Had their own table.
So, but anyways, the whole point was. So then I flew up to San Francisco, drove to San Jose, worked all day covering the game.
Yeah,
we ate at night. Now it's 1:30 in the morning. And I have to drive back up to San Francisco at 1:30, sit in the airport for a few more hours, and then my flight left at 6 a.m. So we're talking 30 hours without sleep and just, oh, my God.
Like,
when I got back, it's the most tired I've ever been as a human being in my entire life. I've never been that tired.
Like, I was relieved partly that I didn't have to go back up to San Jose and cover game six, mainly because, like, I had a feeling that would have been my plan too. Like, it would have been an early morning flight, it would have been the game, and then an early flight out the next day. Instead I got to give Ken from Sinbin.Vegas a snow shower when he got on the ice for the first time, and my goodness, that was fun.
I am so mad I missed that.
Dude can't use his left foot for anything, but it was fine.
He skates like you skateboard.
Yeah,
it looks like he's on an ice skateboard, but it's invisible. His left leg just stays still. His left leg just, he holds it still, and then he uses his right leg to propel his left leg forward. Like, it's embarrassing.
I was pretty stoked about the Chicago Wolves jersey. Like, the entire getup was pretty awesome, except for the scarf. I gave him a lot of crap about the scarf.
He just looked so uncomfortable. I only saw, like, what, 30 seconds of video of it. I wasn't there for it, but man.
Dude, I made him go backwards.
I think when I was, like, 5, when I learned how to ice skate, the first time I ever got on skates as a 5-year-old. And when you're 5, you're an idiot.
Well, yeah, you're not afraid.
And I still think I was more comfortable than him.
No, so he had, I was sitting next to him on the bench at, like, 20 minutes into the skate, and I said, hey, man, when you get back out there, let's go backwards. Like, you've clearly mastered going forward. Let's see if you can go backward. He's like, yeah, that's fine. I could do that. No big deal. So he starts at the blue line, and about 3.5 minutes later, he isn't even to the face-off circle just outside the blue line, right? And he's like, and I'm like, yeah, no, you're totally moving. He's like, you see that blue line? It's getting farther away from me. I'm like, no, I see it. It's It's like wind and momentum that's carrying you backwards, not
skating,
right?
Luckily, the AC was on.
So then he says to me, he's like, oh, this is defense. This is, no one could get by me. So, of course, I skated around him, and he tried to hit me, and it didn't work. And then some kid, I don't know whose kid it was, but it might have been one of Matt's kids. It's just like, he got behind you. And it was like, oh, ha, let's make fun of Ken. And then, no, but it was good. It was fun. Yeah. It was a good day for hockey. Obviously, that's the day of game six in the 4-2 series win against the San Jose Sharks, the team that Greg Wyshynski of ESPN predicted would beat the Golden Knights in the second round, because the Golden Knights had one round in them, and now all of a sudden something's going to change, and they're going to say, oh my gosh, we could actually win the Stanley Cup.
He also picked the Kings in five, didn't he?
No. He picked the Golden Knights over the Kings.
Okay, who was it that picked the Kings in five? Someone from ESPN.
Yeah, it was probably Barry Melrose.
Jeez.
And it was Melrose because, oh, they've got intangibles, yeah, and they've got leadership, and they've got, what about hockey? Well, they can hit you. Well, what about hockey?
Yeah.
Well, I don't have a reason hockey related that they're going to win, but that's fine. So anyway, the big storyline going into game six was Will Carrier's injured in game five, only plays 4 minutes. That really kind of puts a damper on what Gerard Gallant wanted from his fourth line. Cause let's be honest, games 2, 3, and 4, Gerard Gallant got practically nothing from his fourth line.
Yeah, they weren't
good. And it really hampered his ability to play his top lines the minutes he wanted to play them and allow them to play with speed and play fresh and try to get through the neutral zone against the Sharks. So, Ryan Reeves. Clearly, Ryan Reeves, when you look out at your scratched players and you see a guy like Tomáš Tatar and you see a guy like Tomáš Nosek, you say to yourself, it has to be Ryan Reeves that's going in ahead of those two guys. I can joke all I want to, and we can make this Jesse was wrong part two. And I know the fans want it. They're clamoring for it. And maybe if Ryan Reeves would have scored a goal, maybe you'd have hard-sold it a little bit more. But Jesse Granger, were you wrong on Ryan Reeves and his ability to play within himself, within the Golden Knights system, in a playoff game?
So if we remember, Jesse was wrong. How far into the season was that? That was after the Pittsburgh and the Tampa Bay wins.
Yeah.
My point is, one game does not mean I'm wrong.
It was the biggest game of the year.
Otherwise, I would have had to do a Jesse is wrong after they beat Dallas.
I mean, we
in Dallas on October 6th.
We probably could have done that, though. Like, so there's so many opportunities to do Jesse was wrong.
I love Ryan Reeves, the guy. He's awesome.
Everybody wants him to, like, kill you in the locker room. I don't get it.
Yeah. Ryan and I are cool. Like, he's great. I talk to him all the time, even when he's scratched, like, when he's just walking through the locker room. Like, I make it a point to talk to him because I like him. He's a good guy. He played really well. But I will say this. Everyone that's raving about how great Ryan Reeves played, you realize that's only because you set the bar so unbelievably low that all he has to do is not be terrible, and he makes it over your goal for him. Like,
sure. Well, yes.
The goal of the game was don't commit a penalty.
No.
Can you imagine any other player in the NHL on the Golden Knights? All right, as long as Jonathan Marchessault doesn't commit a penalty tonight, that's a good game. Of course not. That'd be moronic.
Well, yeah, but Jonathan Marchessault is not Ryan Reeves.
Okay,
as far
a fourth-line player.
Okay,
Belmar.
But that's the thing, right? You're saying don't take a penalty. Our buddy, good friend of the show, Daniel Negreanu, put forth a four-point system for Ryan Reeves.
Okay, so he had four really low bars to clear.
Hey, but he hit all of them. And we were talking about it. We said, what has to happen? One of the four, and it's a successful game? And he's like, well, no. Four, he played a great game. And that happened.
Yeah, but those are four. I never agreed on those achievements, meaning it's a good game. Okay, he didn't. He wasn't embarrassed and didn't give up a goal while
he was
on the ice.
Okay, but he was playing against the top line of San Jose. Hemmed them in.
Ryan Reeves had, in particular, a few really good forechecking plays where they could not get the puck out of their own zone.
No.
And they ended up having to have Martin Jones freeze it or ice it. And then what that does is it allows Carlson and Marchessault and Smith to get out there in the offensive zone with the faceoff and create chances. And Reeves did a good job, but like at the same time, there were a couple times where the puck was fed to him in front of the net, and he whiffed on it like someone that's never held a hockey stick in their life.
Do you want to know? So I asked him today, right? So I asked Ryan Reeves, I said, hey, could you have done your job any better in game six? Coming in, you're mm-hmm. cold, you haven't played in a long time. Could you have done anything better? He's like, yeah, I could have scored. So he's aware of it. I mean, he knows.
Look, and I talked to him after the game, and like, just for all those people that love to talk about how I hate on Ryan Reeves.
He's the worst.
The story after the game that I wrote was centered around Ryan Reeves, giving him credit.
Yeah.
And I was really happy for him because I feel bad for guys that are scratches all the time. Mm-hmm. Especially on a team like this that's clearly having fun. This is the biggest story in sports. And I feel like they're probably better at being a team player than I am because I would be almost upset that I'm kind of along for the ride.
Oh, you couldn't handle it.
Yeah. So Reeves just sitting there watching this happen and wanting to be out there so badly, wanting to be out there and just not getting the chance. I was very happy for him to get the chance in a huge game, play well enough, contribute, and get the win, and get to do that post-game locker room interview. And I was glad for Reeves because, like I said, I like him as a guy, and mm-hmm. I'm glad that he was able to get in on this, for lack of a better term. He's not just along for the ride. He's not just a passenger. He's actually helping this team.
He's now played a part in what they're doing.
And I will say this. He looked like a different Ryan Reeves than we saw in the regular season. And mm-hmm. he told me, the quote in the story, I was not playing good hockey the last 2 weeks of the season, and it was a good decision to take me out of the lineup because you want to put the best lineup in there. Ryan Reeves said that.
Right. But and I think that's part of this whole thing that we're privy to, that fans aren't privy to, is that Ryan Reeves doesn't have any delusions about who he is as a hockey player, about what he brings to the table. And when he tells you that, when he says, I wasn't playing well, and it was smart for Gallant to bench me, that should go a long way. And you've got this game out of Ryan Reeves. If Will Carrier can't go for game one, game two, game three of the Western Conference Finals, and Gerard Gallant wants that physicality, is Ryan Reeves going to be able to reproduce what he did in game six over the course of a series against either Winnipeg or Nashville?
They're really fast. That's the difference. San Jose's not fast.
I know.
Those two teams are extremely fast. Here's the quote from Ryan Reeves. Obviously, you never want to be taken out of the lineup, but I don't think I was playing my best hockey for the last 3 weeks of the season, and you have to go with the best lineup. In playoff hockey, everything gets ramped up, so I definitely didn't want to pick up where I left off. That's for sure.
Yeah, well, you got better.
Very self-aware, and where I was going with that was he looked like a different guy, It wasn't – he didn't have more skill than he normally does. He had jump. He was fresher than everyone else out there. And one key thing that Gallant said, and Gallant has been very, very, very good this year at not criticizing his players ever, yeah. ever. Mm-hmm. He never criticizes them. He never singles anyone out. He never throws anyone under the bus. And the game before that, before Carrier went out and Reeves came in, he benched Tatar.
Yep. And Nosek.
Nosek mm-hmm. and Merrill for Spezza. Yep. He had three lineup changes. And after the game, he was asked, what were you thinking with those lineup changes? And he said, and this was, I guarantee you this was intentional. Mm-hmm. He said, I want hungry players. We needed, when you lose a game, you go with your coaching staff and you look at the film and you want hungry players out there. That is a direct shot at either Nosek or Tatar. I am 100% sure that is a shot at either Nosek or Tatar.
No, I completely agree with you, and I'm glad you brought that up because you were not at the McPhee press conference yesterday.
I was sleeping.
Yes, which is fine. You're entitled.
I didn't sleep for 30 hours. I got home and I'm like, man, McPhee pressers in like 3 hours. Like, yeah, no, I'm sleeping.
Yeah. So one thing that George said that I found to be interesting is he was asked about, you know, Tatar and kind of the long-term picture and all that. And he said that the guys that came in late, so meaning the Ryan Reeves, the Tomas Tatars,
even
the Ryan Carpenters, right, that they've had a hard time kind of fitting in. And what I don't really get is how is that possible when this locker room is the, quote, golden misfits, the band of brothers that came together because their teams didn't want them. And I wanted to ask Ryan Carpenter this, but I didn't want to do it today because it was right next to Tomáš Tatar, because I would argue that Ryan Carpenter is meshed and fit in very well on this team. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of trying to figure out what line you want to put him on and what way you need to deploy him in order to get the best out of him in a certain game. But I don't think that he has had any issues gelling with this team. So why was Ryan Carpenter able to come in here, gel with this team, and become a part of what's happening when Tomáš Tatar hasn't been able to? And I'd even argue that Ryan Reeves has had an easier time of coming in here and blending in and becoming a part of this team, where Tomáš Tatar just isn't. Like, he just doesn't feel like a Golden Knight hockey player.
Okay, so this is my guess.
Yep.
When McPhee made the trade for Tatar, I and a lot of people said, oh, he fits in perfectly with the Golden Knights style because he's a fast skater. He likes to play in transition. He's a high-flying guy that likes to score.
Good hands.
Yeah. The one thing that every single person, there's not one person on this team that doesn't forecheck except for Tomáš Tatar.
Mm.
He's not a great forechecker. And I don't think it's Tatar is lazy. I think he's just not. He can't go into those corners and out-muscle guys. He's not going to be the Alex Tuck on somebody. Even James Neal, who's not a great skater, is good on the forecheck. David Perron, forecheck. Obviously, the top line is just a nightmare for other teams, mm-hmm. of Carlson, Smith, and Marchessault. Belmar, Nosek, Carrier. Go down the list. Every single forward on this team is a good forechecker.
Yeah.
Tomáš Tatar isn't. And before the game that he took Tatar out,
yep.
Gallant said, I don't remember the exact percentage he said, but he's like, I think we were getting like 90% of the forecheck, but there's just 10% that aren't forechecking.
Right.
And then Tatar sat out the next game, and Nosek. And then after the game, he said, we want players that are hungrier. And I don't want to make this me saying Tatar's lazy. That's not it at all. Right. I think that's just not his game.
Now, if it's not his game, and so is he not fitting because he can't get in on the forecheck, he can't create time and space for other guys, he can't turn pucks over? Is it that? Or is it guys get frustrated on the bench when they're forechecking and creating turnovers and creating something out of nothing, and he's not consistently doing it? Is it a perceived effort thing, do you think? And that's why I wanted to try to talk to Carpenter. I want to try to talk to the guys and find out why is it. And kudos to McPhee for saying all three of those guys, for saying Carpenter, for saying Reeves, for saying Tatar, because we all knew he wasn't talking about all three of those guys.
Yeah, he's talking about Tatar.
He's talking about Tatar, and he's not worried about it long term. I think Tatar could eventually get to that point where he can play Golden Knights hockey, but you have to wonder, sitting here right now, was it worth what was given up to bring in Tomáš Tatar right
obviously
now?
Obviously not. He obviously overpaid for that, and we all said that when it happened. This is another theory on, and I think Tatar, when he came in, he's so used to playing, and the Red Wings were good a few years ago, mm-hmm. with him, but like lately, the Red Wings have been trash. Just complete flaming pile of garbage on the side of the road in Detroit. That's what the Red Wings have been.
So they're not good?
They're not good. And he, when you play for a team like that and you're the like leading scorer on a team like that, there's no pressure at all.
Right.
Just go score. We're going to lose anyways. I'm going to get mine. If I don't play well, it's no big deal. Everyone around me sucks anyways. And then you go from that type of environment to a team that is playing the best hockey of any team in the NHL. They just gave up a first, a second, and a third round pick for you at the deadline. You are seen as the piece that is going to put them over the top. All of a sudden, you go from no pressure, and you're one of the most talented guys on the team, mm-hmm. to you're a third-line player now. There's a ton of pressure. They gave up all this for you, and every game you don't score, the pressure only gets more.
Right.
And he went through that stretch, and he still has yet to score a goal that was like a skillful goal. He has four goals with the Golden Knights. All four of them are either deflections or rebound attempts where the goalie has now slid out of position and he puts it into the empty net. He has yet to score a goal that was like Tatar beat the goalie.
Right. So let me ask you this. Game one, Western Conference Finals. You have a healthy Nosek, a healthy Tatar. Carrier's out because he's hurt. And you have Ryan Reeves. Who do you put in on the fourth line?
Nosek.
Over Reeves.
Yeah. I think I'm not going to be furious if Reeves is in there.
Sure.
Because he played well. I can't argue that. He played well against the Sharks in game six. He played a very good game. I think Winnipeg and Nashville are so fast. And Reeves, just does not match up well with him. They are very, very, very fast.
Do you think, in the case of Winnipeg, because I don't think Reeves is going to be able to get in and catch anybody on Nashville. Like, I don't think he's going to be able to get to Subban. I don't think he's going to be able to get to Ekholm or Ellis or Yossi or any of those guys. Like, I don't think he's going to be able to get to them on the forecheck. But don't you think he could probably get to Dustin Byfuglien?
Do you want him to get to Dustin Byfuglien?
He has to get to Dustin Byfuglien. If he's in the lineup, he's got to at least get to Dustin Byfuglien, right? Like, he's got to be able to get in his head a little bit. And Dustin Byfuglien's not going to be intimidated or scared by probably anybody in the league.
Man, that's
But if there was one freight train coming in that could do it.
That's a scary battle right there between those two. That's two really big, mean, strong guys.
But think about it from this perspective. And I'm not saying that I don't know, man. If Ryan Reeves could get in on Dustin Byfuglien and just aggravate him a little bit. Because we've seen from Byfuglien, if he's got a temper, he doesn't like to get hit. He doesn't like that kind of stuff. If he could goad him into a couple of dumb penalties, maybe a fight. Get him off the ice for 5 minutes or so. I mean, that's going to be the X factor if the Golden Knights play Winnipeg. It's how in the hell do you stop Dustin Byfuglien?
I think, and obviously Reeves is a fourth line player, and I'm going to talk about top six guys, but if I'm Dustin Byfuglien, I'm more afraid of Alex Tuch and his speed and stick skills coming in on me to steal the puck. I'm more afraid of that than I am Reeves coming in to hit the crap out of me. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Eric Halla coming in to forecheck. Like, a quick, skilled guy that's going to take the puck right off my stick and go the other way is scarier than Reeves coming in. If you're Byfuglien, because he's not afraid of that.
Right. So let's kind of get into that then. Is there a defense, when you look at Winnipeg and you look at Nashville, is there a defense you'd rather face?
Oh, of course, Winnipeg. For sure. Of course. I mean, Nashville's got six guys that are dangerous on defense. Yeah. Now, but Winnipeg is much deeper in forward. I mean, Nashville's got Arvidsson is good. Forsberg is spectacular.
Right.
And Johansson and who else? Know what I mean?
Kyle Turris has gone ice cold.
You start
Nick Bonino. Like, Nick Bonino's been their best player.
Yeah, and they just don't. Whereas, like, Winnipeg, it's like Point, Shifley, Line A. They've got so many
Kyle
guys.
Kyle Connor is turning guys inside out. He's making PK Subban look like a pedestrian defenseman.
The Jets' third line is going to be a nightmare for the Golden Knights, I think, if that series happens.
So you want – who do you want?
I want Nashville because I want to go to Nashville.
Well, okay, take your – from a hockey X's and O's perspective, who do you want?
Nashville still.
What's the better team?
Nashville.
You think Nashville? Just because of the lack of depth up front?
I think the Golden Knights are going to be... Yeah, I think the Golden Knights forwards have an advantage over Nashville's forwards. Defense is not close. Nashville has better... But Nashville has way better defense than the Jets, and it's not helping them much in that series. I mean, it's going to seven, and Winnipeg's defense has held their own.
So the fear that I have against Winnipeg is that they're a big enough team and a physical enough team to do what San Jose did in games 2 through 4. And that's win the 50-50 puck battles in the neutral zone, slowing the Vegas Golden Knights down in transition. And we've seen this team, if they can't get goals off the rush, they really struggle to find the back of the net. I also think Connor Hellebuck has been really good in the second round. I think he's been better. He's got better lateral movement than Martin Jones does. And I think Winnipeg scares me more because of what I think they can impose on Vegas.
Yeah. Look, just listen to how deep they are.
Okay.
Winnipeg's first line is obviously spectacular. Shifley with Wheeler and Connor on his wings.
Yeah, okay.
That's on one of the best lines in the NHL.
That's good. That's good.
Their second line is Paul Stastny, Patrick Laine, and Nikolai Ehlers. Are you kidding me? Okay, so that's obviously stacked to the brim again.
Yeah.
Their third line is Matthew Perreault, Brian Little, and Joel Armia is not good. But it's Brian Little is a great third-line center.
Very good hockey player.
And then their fourth line sucks, and the Golden Knights are going to dominate that.
Well, not if Ryan Reeves is in. You don't know that.
That's true. That's true. But, man, that's disgustingly deep how good their forwards are. And their defense isn't bad. Morrissey and Trouba are their first pairing. Enstrom and Byfuglien.
Tyler Myers, is he healthy?
Yeah, he's their third pair. He's their sixth defenseman. Yeah.
But so like Byfuglien, I think makes up for so much. He's like a better defensively Brent Burns, right?
Eee.
Like
he doesn't handle the puck like Burns does.
No,
but
he's better defensively. I'd rather take that over Burns. Like and handling the puck is one thing; getting the shot through is another.
Look at this path that the Golden Knights are taking, though, as far as great defensemen. They go Doughty in the first round, Burns in the second, and they're going to get Byfuglien or Subban in the third.
Or the defense all-stars of the Nashville Predators.
Yeah.
From a goaltending perspective, I'd rather play Nashville all day long.
We haven't gotten to that yet. Oh, my God.
I don't understand what it is about Pekka that you go into a game and you have no clue whatsoever what you're going to get. Like, there is no pattern you could draw from. There's no way of telling if he's going to see everything and stop everything or be a complete sieve. Like, this guy is so incredibly inconsistent.
Yes.
He's impossible to read when it comes to a road game. Like, I don't... How are you a Vezina Trophy finalist? And you, I honestly, game seven, I have no idea what Pekka Rinne is going to show up.
He's a Vezina Trophy finalist. He's lucky I don't vote on that. Although, I don't know if my one vote is enough to. No, he would not be in my top three for Vezina. I do not vote on Vezina. It's the broadcasters, I think, but.
Stupid broadcasters.
He.
It's because he's got a funny
name. If you watch his games this year, he wasn't good. His defense in front of him is insanely good, and all of his shots come from the outside, and he sees them all, and Nashville plays in front of him so well. He's not good. He's not. Connor Hellebuck is significantly better at goaltending than
he's been way better this series. Way better. More consistent.
Pekka Rinne, and that's the other thing, is he gets flustered so easily, especially on the road.
Yeah.
If it's Nashville, he will be pulled in game three or four. Put it down. Mark it down 100%. Pekka Rinne is getting pulled from one of the first two games in Vegas. It's happening.
So, consensus then is you think Nashville is the easier draw for Vegas to get through to the Stanley Cup Finals.
And let me be clear, I don't think it's going to be easy. I mean,
no. Easier draw.
Yes. Yep. I think they both go seven. I got Golden Knights in seven versus either team.
You just really want to go to Nashville three times.
I really want to go to Nashville three times.
But it's going to be the one day games are going to be crazy flying, especially with the early starts.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you can get
the
like a red eye.
Noon start is wild.
Yeah.
There's
going to
be a
suck.
Noon start in Nashville.
That's game five, right?
Yeah.
Oh, man. So you're going to have to fly in way early.
Well, I'll fly in the day before for that one.
Hey,
the Golden Knights are undefeated during the day, so Golden Knights fans got to be thrilled. That's game five is a guaranteed win.
That's very true.
And I just guaranteed he's getting pulled in games in one of the first two games in Vegas. So.
Oh, God, yeah, no. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets pulled in two.
I don't think he's going to. Okay, that would be.
Come on.
That would be crazy.
No,
but
he's been awful. He's been horrible.
He hasn't been good. But he's had some. He just pitched a shutout last night. So, like, there are games where he's good.
When everything's coming from the outside, it's not hard to do that.
No, I just don't think Pekka Rinne is that good of a goalie. He's never been that good of a goalie in his entire career. He's playing better the last couple years, but. I mean, we're in what, year 13 or 14 of his career? Like, and he's never been even considered a top goalie.
Well, he's going to win the Vezina this year.
That's insane. He's going to have a Vezina, and Marc-Andre Fleury won't.
Well, he didn't play as many. He didn't play enough games.
Clearly, well, no. But I mean,
clearly, Marc-Andre Fleury didn't play.
No, but I mean,
games.
In his entire career, Fleury's,
no,
never,
I know,
Fleury's
I'm saying.
Never even been a Vezina finalist. How crazy is that?
It's wild.
He's never
really
been a
crazy.
Finalist for Vezina.
I mean, his career numbers have been okay, not great. He's had the benefit of playing with two of the greatest players of all time. Yeah. So it's not hard to believe that Marc-Andre Fleury didn't really get recognition or due playing with Crosby and Malkin and all the talent that was there, which is fine. It's neither here nor there. But if he was a little bit healthier this year, I couldn't imagine him not being a finalist this year.
Yeah.
You know, and let's talk about that real quick. So Martin Jones was interesting to me because we were on the official pregame show before game one. And I believe Martin Jones' name was brought up. Like, what is Martin Jones going to bring to this series? And you and I talked about it. You move him laterally. He's a human goalie. He's not going to make a lot of saves when it comes to lateral movement. That's just not his game. And I found it really funny that for his career, which is obviously 1 year, four games, he is a sub-900 save percentage against the Vegas Golden Knights. And I pointed it out that night. And what did he finish the series? Sub-900.
Yeah, he had a bad series. He had one good game.
One.
The 4-0 game, game four, up in San Jose, he was really good. Yeah. Like, that game could have easily been... I mean, San Jose scored four goals.
That was the game he stole.
They probably should have won it 4-3 or 4-2, but they won it 4-0 because he was great.
Yeah.
Other than that, he was awful. Not just, like, average. Like, he was bad for most of the games.
So, is it just a matter of this is a team that's built to beat Martin Jones? Because he's got good numbers against pretty much everybody else.
Yeah.
A lot of other teams. But... this was kind of the same thing that happened in 2016 when they played the Penguins, and he just was human. He wasn't very good.
I think this is going to sound weird, but playing goalie against transition, a team coming at you full speed, is almost like a different position than playing goalie in a sustained offensive zone pressure.
It's fair.
I struggle in transition.
Well, you're not very good.
Well, yeah, but comparative. I struggle with both. I'm awful with both, but comparative, like,
sure.
From once the puck is in the zone and it's just being passed around the zone, and I'm kind of settled, and I can just follow the puck and I can go around. Like, it's so much easier than if it's a 2-on-1 coming down.
Absolutely.
And like you just said, he struggled with Pittsburgh, a fast team that scores a lot in transition. The Golden Knights got a lot of goals in transition. It's tough, and it's two completely different things. And I think each goalie, like Fleury, is amazing at the transition coming down because he's so good at getting over there, and he's so good at just making those ridiculous acrobatic saves.
Right.
His style, that breakaway stop he had on, who was it?
It was Hurdle.
Hurdle, yeah. Was amazing.
Jesus, Hurdle. Oh, God.
Hurdle was a nightmare for the Golden Knights.
That guy, I like him. I do.
He drew seven penalties.
I like the way he plays the game. I really do.
Yeah,
but my God, he was snake bit the last two games.
Yeah. Well, he had, what, four goals, I think, in the series?
Yeah, something like that.
He had a bunch of goals in the series, and he drew seven penalties. He was tough. And he could have had another three or four goals.
It's a nightmare. Now, Evander Kane was kind of banged up.
He was awful.
He was banged up. He said he separated his shoulder or something like that.
He didn't do much.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, his greatest contribution was getting suspended.
Yeah.
And then giving the soundbite that Marc-Andre Fleury is human and he's a beatable goalie. Goalies are made to be beaten, and that didn't really work out too well for him either. So, and then obviously the curious case of Joe Thornton. It was released today that he had a torn ACL and a torn MCL.
Why is he skating before every game?
I don't get it. I don't that became a thing for me when I was up there. Like, every game I would take a picture and I'd be like, there's Joe Thornton's leadership. Look at him, like, being on the ice when he shouldn't be.
It makes no sense.
Like, what's the point?
Why get dressed to skate for 5 minutes?
So, like, and that's like the greatest thing too, because he wasn't up in the press box. Like, he wasn't hanging around the other players in the press box or anything like that. Like, he probably went out there with like Novocaine shots just to get through warmups, and then had treatment all night after that.
Yeah, he's just sitting in the locker room in an ice bath.
Yeah, like,
so that he could have done that.
Like, what's the point? And like, now he's probably not going to make camp if he even decides to play. What's the point? Like,
he needs to just retire.
Joe Thornton needs to retire.
You know what I want? This is what I'm rooting for.
Oh God,
I'm rooting for Joe Thornton to officially retire from the NHL,
okay,
but still do pregame skate every game next year. That's what I want.
So, Pete, you thinking about getting Joe out of retirement for one of these games? No, he's been ruled out. He'll still take warm-ups, though. Why? Well, you know, we actually haven't answered that question as to why he's taking warm-ups, but we're just going to keep doing it because we made it to the second round of the playoffs because we're really happy about that. So, there's San Jose. Now, let's talk about a series that finished up yesterday. What the hell, man?
The one year.
I don't go all in on the freaking Capitals.
Matt Murray happened. That's
how. Oh my God, he's so bad. What was he doing on the Kuznetsov goal? Like, I get it. It's a breakaway. It's a partial breakaway. But you still have plenty of time to understand where the pressure's coming from, where the back-checking pressure's coming from. You know that the only play he's got is either a shot or he's going to his left. Like, how do you not seal off your five hole? How do you not do that as a goalie, a professional NHL goalie?
He was bad. I mean, he was bad all year. But that was the Achilles. He's
fundamental.
Goaltending was the reason, well, and Sidney Crosby sucked for 2 months, but was the reason they were off to the slow start and everyone thought they were going to miss the playoffs. Yeah. And then it ends up, and then they came back and played amazingly in the second half of the season. But it reared its head again and cost them their chance at a three-peat.
I mean, the entire feel of this series from game one was that Washington was going to win.
No.
That's how I felt.
I felt like they had no chance until Kuznetsov's goal goes in. I gave Washington 0% chance to win the series.
That's really funny. I still feel like Doc and Eddie and Pierre Maguire are going to show up to the Verizon Center tomorrow and just be ready. Like, you know, Doc and Eddie, I know it's dark in here, but we're still waiting for the Washington Capitals and Pittsburgh Penguins to get on the ice for Game 7. Pierre... The Capitals won. No, they didn't. It's not a thing that ever happens. So what happens now? Washington going to just get absolutely destroyed by Tampa Bay? Because that's what I think is going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I picked Tampa Bay to go to the finals from the very beginning. I think they're... And Boston played like crap, but I think kind of the reasoning for me picking Tampa has been correct so far, that they are just so much better than everyone, and they got bored at the end of the year, and we're like, yeah, we've had this first place in the East for about 3 months now.
Yeah,
can we play some games that matter already? And now that the games have mattered, they have steamrolled through both series.
Well, I mean, Tampa has looked like a completely different team since that game one against Boston where they got absolutely destroyed, and I wouldn't want to play Tampa. Not right now.
It took them 10 games to get to the conference finals.
Yeah.
Which also, by the way, that's also how many games it took the Golden Knights, which is freaking insane.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the thing is, like, Stamkos isn't even playing that well right now. And they're steamrolling teams. Vasilevsky has been great.
Very good.
Tampa is, I mean, and like you said, now that everyone gave up on Washington, mainly you, they're going to win it all.
So mad. I'm so mad. I'm so happy for Ovechkin. I really am. Like, he was awesome after the game and Kuznetsov's crane celebration. It's what it is. It's fine. It was spur of the moment, I guess. Whatever. Yeah.
Well, he does that every time, though, right?
Well, he does it every big goal that he scored. I mean, I know he did it last year, and then they lost Game 6 and Game 7 or whatever it was. But yeah, I'm happy for the Capitals. I'm pissed off I didn't go. I didn't talk myself into it again this year.
We picked them to lose to Columbus.
Well, yeah, they should have lost to Columbus. Yeah, we would have avoided this entire thing. But, you know, I you gotta feel really bad for the Washington Capitals because now they've got to go play the actual best team in the East.
Tampa's like, so good.
They're deep. Like, they're not concerned with people licking them in this series anymore. Like, it's gonna just be Tampa Bay steamrolling the Washington Capitals.
I think it goes six.
I don't think it goes. I think it's five.
Yeah,
five or less.
If that one goes four or five, yeah, I mean that's huge. If that one goes four or five, Tampa's gonna be waiting a long time because this Golden Knights versus either Nashville or Winnipeg is gonna be a long series.
Yeah, I agree.
Because that that series is going to take a lot out of
whoever. You worried at all that the Golden Knights are going to be off for about 4 or 5 days before they play either Winnipeg or Nashville?
I talked to Gallant today and asked him, I asked him, I remember when you had the 10 game or the 9 day layoff between the last series. And I remember him saying, yeah, it's good to get this rest. I'd really prefer it to only be like 4 or 5 days off. That'd be perfect.
Right.
Instead of the 9. So today I asked him, remember when you said that?
Yeah.
So is this perfect? He's like, yep, perfect. Love it. He's like, we gave him yesterday. They did nothing. Carlson was at the pool, he told me. Carlson spent the day at the pool yesterday.
Smart kid.
Yeah. Then today it was an optional skate. Only about 11 guys and 2 goalies skated, including Fleury took the day off. Lagasse and Subban were out there, and they had only 11 skaters. So 2 days off, 3 days of hard practice, 2 days of hard practice before they fly out to Nashville or Winnipeg. I think it's perfect, especially if you can get Carrier back in the lineup.
I think that's going to be key. Right, like getting something more out of Will Carrier, Edouard Belmar. Like, the fourth line has to be a factor in the Western Conference Final. They have to be.
Yeah, especially if it's Winnipeg, because Winnipeg, you could argue, the first lines are both stacked. The second line, Winnipeg has a clear advantage, and the third line, Winnipeg has a clear advantage. The Golden Knights can't lose every line but the top line. Like, they the fourth line has to beat Winnipeg's fourth line. And obviously they're not going to match up like one for one every time, but like, they got to go out there and steal a couple shifts against Winnipeg's top two lines. And yeah, the fourth line is going to be very key. For Nashville, I don't think it's as important because Nashville's not as deep at forward.
Well, I mean, you've touched on it a little bit. I mean, Kyle Turris has been kind of invisible. Nick Bonino's been good, but that's, you know, a third line guy at best. And
Fisher hasn't been great.
Fisher's just—he's looked old.
He's there for the national anthem singer.
Can we talk about that for a minute? how in the hell are you, how does Lady Antebellum screw up so bad?
Oh, that was great.
Like, it was so bad, and so
the girl at the Sharks Arena didn't even screw up that bad, and she screwed up because the fans scared her.
Well, that's because her team is booing the national anthem, so good for them.
That was so great.
Congratulations, SAP Center.
Gave proof through the night that our stars were still
stars
there.
Our stars were still there. Oh, so good. It was so good. But no, like the Lady Antebellum, they come out there, and they get this hero's welcome, right? And everyone's so excited because Nashville's got celebrities that come out and sing the national anthem, and they screw it up 9 times out of 10. They either sound awful or they screw it up, and I've never heard something that bad.
Yeah, they like sang the same line twice, but like midway through it, they realized it was the wrong line. So
but it was like
it just like was silence.
But it's a trio, right? So they're doing harmonies based on what the lead guy's doing, and then they're like, oh no. He's saying the wrong words. Do we come in with the right words, or do we keep going with it, or what?
Yeah.
What do we do? And it was just—it was three people that were not on any page of the same book at all, and it was the worst thing I'd ever heard in my entire life.
It was bad.
Dennis K. Morgan wouldn't have done that.
What was great? Speaking of national anthems, though, what was equally great as that was bad was the national anthem singer for Game 6 in San Jose.
Yeah,
was coached. I am 100% sure there was a meeting, and in my mind, this is in like a conference room that's like very serious, like a marble table, and like this is like a very serious meeting with like 8 people in suits.
Sure.
And they're like, all right, guys, what are we going to do about this national anthem thing? Because Golden Knights fans, for those that don't know, I'm sure everyone listening to this knows, they yell the Knights during the anthem, and they've been doing it on the road, and it's been getting pretty loud in L.A. and San Jose. The first game up in San Jose, Game 3, they yelled it, and San Jose fans were like, oh, what the hell was that? So then they were ready for it in the next game in Game 4, and they preemptively booed the crap out of the word night to try to drown out the Golden Knights fans saying night.
Such a good look.
I filmed it, tweeted, here are Sharks fans booing the national anthem, hashtag un-American.
Hashtag sarcasm.
Just kidding. But then all these freaking Trump people and all these war veterans got all they got on me. Oh, man. They were like. But anyways, that started a whole. I'd like to think that my tweet is what caused this meeting with the suits and the marble table and all that. But probably not.
No, I think it's good.
So, anyways, they had this meeting. I know they did. And they told him, you need to find a way to sing this to screw up these people that are trying to yell night. And he did, and it was great.
I They didn't televise the anthem.
This is probably going to make Ari furious as a producer.
Are you going to play the video over the microphone
Trying to get Ari to edit this in, I think it's easier if I just play it.
So while you're loading that up, can we just talk about really quickly Carnell Johnson wearing the shark tooth bracelet?
Yeah, that was
Golden
great.
Pipes. That was fantastic.
Yeah. He's just awesome.
He's such a cool guy. We had him in studio the other day.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I haven't met him.
Dude, he's badass. I love that guy. All right, so super professional audio here. Yeah, Jesse Granger is going to play some video into the microphone.
This is the guy trying to sing with no rhythm and trying to sing the word night as fast as he possibly can to catch the fans off guard so that they aren't able to sing it at the right time. How great was that? And they all yell it like a second late, and then they're just like, "Oh man,
that's genius. Well done, San Jose."
So now, I guarantee the singer in Winnipeg or Nashville is going to do the same thing.
Yeah, I don't know. If it's Nashville, I would just hope that they can get through the national anthem without screwing it up. That would
just have them screwed up and just miss that line. Just don't even sing that line.
No, it'll still happen. Come on. One thing I do want to talk about right now is the veteran fan garbage, right? So what the hell is wrong with the SAP Center and the San Jose Sharks fans? Because everything apparently is the ref's fault. Everything. Literally everything.
Yeah, they booed
everything.
Ref, you suck, they chanted for like a solid 10 minutes. We're 10 minutes of game time after Nate Schmidt's goal. And they're still chanting, "Ref, you suck," over a play that was not subjective, was not based on judgment, was not the ref's choice in any way. Either the puck goes in the net or it doesn't go in the net.
It's pixelated right there for you.
It did clearly go in the net. And they showed it on the Jumbotron, the video of the puck going in the net. And yet they still booed that it was a goal. I will say, my overall impression of the three games in San Jose is they do a great job.
The in-game entertainment is fine.
I thought the fans were good other than the
refuse thing. No. I thought the fans were fine too, but there was like in-game entertainment pregame was not very good. So
really?
Like, No, the pregame stuff, the lights and everything, that was fine, but like before warm-ups, trying to get people going in the building, right? So there was one moment in particular that I thought was really hysterical. There's three guys. It's a father and two sons, and it's a young son and like kind of an older son, and he goes to them and says, "So how many playoff games have you had here at the Shark Tank?" They're like, "Oh, it's our first game, first playoff game." And they're like, "Oh, that's cool. What do you think's going to happen?" He's like, "Oh, I think we're going to win. Yay, go Sharks," right? And then he goes to the kid and he's like, "Who's your favorite shark?" And the kid is wearing a mask, like a goalie mask. He doesn't take the mask off. And they can't get the microphone under there. So he puts the microphone to the front of the mask. And the kid's like, "I really like Patrick Marleau." And then they pull the mic away. And like the dude that's doing the in-game entertainment is like, "Tell your kid to say, you know, a current player or whatever." That'd
that's
be great.
A player that's not on the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, exactly. So then he goes back. He's like, I really like Evander Kane. He's good. I like him." And so that was like one instance. And then there was another one where it was the three keys to the game, and there was this lady that had a sign that says, "Chomp them, eat them, beat them." And they like they went on and on, like, "Oh, you're going to chomp them first, then you're going to eat them, and then you're going to be like, they're dead. You ate them. You're not going to beat them then, like, thereafter." I don't know.
There was also one where I remember, similar to yours, where there was a woman wearing a Sharks jersey, and the guy goes, "How many times have you worn this jersey to this arena? How ready are you for this moment?" And she's like,
"Tonight.
Actually, I just bought this jersey in the pro shop downstairs."
No, dude. And then there was another. So it was after, it was for, I think it was for game 3. It was game 3. It was after the game 2 overtime winner for San Jose. And they had this dude, he had an eye patch on. It was fantastic. And they go up to him and he's like, "Do you remember where you were when the San Jose Sharks beat the Vegas Golden Knights in double overtime in game 2?" It's like, "Yeah, I was watching the game on my couch with my wife and they scored a goal and I'll never forget it. I was on the couch with my wife and that's what happened. And this is where heroes are made in the second round of the playoffs in game 2 of a 7-game series. And they won that game and I went to bed thereafter and it was great." It was, oh God, it was so bad.
They were interviewing some NBA player and I, for whatever reason, I'm blanking on it right now. I forgot who it was. Some NBA player that's from San Jose.
Yeah,
man, I can't remember where.
That doesn't matter.
I'm blanking. But anyways,
it's
they're
fine.
Like, "Who on the Sharks do you think would be the best basketball player?" And he picked Joe Thornton. What are you doing?
No, he's got moves. Come on.
Are you kidding me? If there's one NHL player that's the worst at basketball in the entire NHL, it's Joe Thornton.
I would have thought Brent Burns would have come to mind before Joe Thornton.
He's tall, at least. Give me someone. Give me Logan Couture. Give me someone with speed. No. Give me someone with agility. Like, NBA, like, basketball requires a lot of agility. And Joe Thornton?
No, he's good. He's totally
the bird,
good.
He's the Birdman Anderson of the NHL, I guess. Jesus, what a horrible choice.
So, let's put a bow on San Jose.
Yeah.
Pete DeBoer, what do you think? Good coach, bad coach, okay coach?
Okay coach, not fun to deal with after the game.
He's a jackass.
He's miserable. He
really is.
He's just a miserable guy. I mean, he's just not ever in a good mood, ever. And after the series was over, I was shocked at how gracious and humble and complimentary of the Golden Knights he was, because I fully expected him to get up there and just be awful.
So the thing I want to highlight with Pete DeBoer is he comes off as prickish, right? So, like, in the pressers that I saw of him after games, especially the games that they won, he would say things to the effect of, "I can't speak for them, but I know we're getting better every game."
Yeah.
And it was those subtle throwing shade moments at the Vegas Golden Knights. But the reality of the situation is, over the course of the final two games, Pete DeBoer made zero adjustments to get his team to win a game.
And Gallant pushed every right button.
Every single one. So Pete DeBoer, to me, seems like one of those guys that can, like, get command of the room pretty quickly after he's hired, get a lot out of his players, and then all of a sudden it just kind of goes the wrong direction. Because I think you're right. I think he's kind of miserable 95% of the time, and I think that just wears thin at some point.
Yeah, to me, the lasting impression will be one of the San Jose writers asked him, this is after the series is over, "Is there anything the Golden Knights did that surprised you?" And his answer was probably the biggest compliment a coach can possibly give an opposing coach in the NHL, and that is, "Before this series, I thought we were the hardest working team in the NHL."
Mm-hmm.
"Not anymore. That team works for Girard every single day."
Yeah.
And if you're a coach, that, especially Gallant, who, I mean, nothing is more important than working hard and having fun and coming to work and competing. But no, for him to say, "I thought my team was the hardest working team in the league, and after this, I don't think that anymore," is a huge compliment to Gerard Gallant.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. We've pretty much wrapped everybody up, but Brent Burns. What are your lasting impressions on Brent Burns after this series?
He had his moments early in the series and faded as it went on. I almost forgot he was out there at times during the last couple games.
It felt to me like what happened in the LA series happened in the San Jose series. It just took 6 games instead of 4.
Just wearing
them down.
Yeah. The weird thing is, though, there were games like game 5 in T-Mobile. It felt like the Golden Knights ran out of gas.
Yeah.
Halfway through the third period. And they were, to use like a fighting reference, like there are some fighters that just punch themselves out and then it's just survival mode after that, I think, feel like that's what they did.
I think a lot of that had to do with Will Carrier missing, you know, 35 minutes of game time.
Yeah, yeah, and they had to play their top lines way more than they want to, yeah.
And that's the danger that we should all recognize when it comes to the Vegas Golden Knights. If they don't get anything from their fourth line, if they're not able to roll four lines and 60, this team is going to run out of gas against teams that are used to having their top two or three lines play closer to 25, 26 minutes a night.
Because those other teams' top six don't forecheck with the intensity that, for the most part.
Sure.
They, like, Wheeler and Connor and Point and Shifley and those guys are going to be, they're going to score a bunch of goals.
Sure.
They are not a nightmare on the forecheck like Carlson, Marchessault, and Smith are. And the reason Carlson, Marchessault, and Smith can do that is because they don't have to save energy because they know they're going to only have to play 18 minutes.
Sure. And then, but, you know, obviously the downside of that is if they can't match that intensity because they're playing 22, 23 minutes a night, what ends up happening is the Wheelers and the Connors, they don't have to worry about all of that pressure up ice, and they can get into the zone where they do all of their damage. So fourth line in whichever series is going to be huge because Gallant needs 9 to 12 minutes, I think, a night from that line.
Yeah, closer to 9, but I agree.
So we'll see what happens. Unfortunately, we can't do a preview podcast because we don't know what the teams are going to be, and you're probably going to be on the road Friday morning.
Yeah,
so
that's the thing about this is they – for the first time, they don't play the first two at home. So it's like, as soon as we find out, it's like, and book the flight for tomorrow type of thing. Like,
sure.
I'm hoping for Nashville. I was told by one of the writers in San Jose, they were like, you better hope it's Nashville so that you can, like, have fun at, in between games and, like, after the games. I'm like, I got trashed in San Jose, man. I think I'll be all right in Winnipeg.
We had a fun evening, I think, in San Jose. You were drinking. I was drinking.
Ken was drinking Dr. Pepper.
Dr. Pepper. Shang Pang was drinking, and then he went to Oakland, Brave Soul, at like 9:30 at night. So good on him. But
I had 10 IPAs that were like 9.7% alcohol.
Yeah, you were in a good spot.
And I had like a couple shots of Fireball. Oh man.
What was it the next day? So we get to morning skate and you look at me and you're like, "Can I just search carbs?"
Yeah.
I need food. I need carbs.
I had the San Jose flu.
Yeah, it was rough.
Yeah, the next morning at morning skate, Ken drove me to the arena. I got up and like I'm in the hallway at our hotel and I'm just like, I felt like death.
Do you remember the conversation we had about Myrtle and the Athletic?
Yes.
Oh, the reply.
Barely.
The reply that he sent to you was fantastic.
Yeah, dude. We went to this like taco shop after. I don't even remember eating the tacos.
You don't remember that at all? No.
Ken drove, by the way, so we were being safe.
Yeah, no, I tapped out. I tapped out before tacos were eaten, so.
Yeah, we went and stopped at this taco place. I don't even remember eating. I don't even remember what I ordered. So anyways, looking forward to Nashville.
So Winnipeg will be just fine for you.
Oh, yeah, I'll find something. Plus, Gary Lawless, that's like, I'm going to hit him up. He's going to take me to the Gary Lawless bar.
Is he, though? Is he?
Like, is he what?
Is he going to actually do that for you?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah? Like,
he wants me to try his sandwich. You know he has a sandwich named after him in Winnipeg.
No, does he really?
Gary Lawless has a sandwich in Winnipeg in a sandwich shop named the Gary Lawless Sandwich.
What is it? What's on it?
It's like roast beef, turkey, and ham. Just as much meat as you can possibly fit in a...
It sounds... like if you were to ask me to make a Gary Lawless sandwich, I think that is exactly what I'd put on there.
Do you need some lettuce? Nope. How about ham? But you already have roast beef. Okay. Yeah.
Tomatoes?
Do you have ham?
Do you want tomatoes? No.
No. Just give me turkey. Wait, you already have roast beef and ham. Yeah, but give me turkey.
No, all of the meats, right?
Yeah,
like all of them. That's funny. You might get, if it's Winnipeg, you might get to run into Timu Solani as well.
That was
he
awesome.
He was such a good player for your Colorado Avalanche back in the day.
He was awesome. Him and Paul Kariya, they're iconic Colorado Avalanche players. When I think Timu Solani and Paul Kariya, I think Colorado Avalanche.
So do I, for sure. All right, so Jesse, what are you working on outside of,
you know
all
what?
This stuff?
So it's embargoed right now, but by the time this comes out, it will be past the time that it's embargoed. So I'm going to tell you guys some inside information that you will have already found out by the time this. But right now, this is inside information. So
can you edit this super quick and we can have it up tonight so Jesse gets in trouble?
No, it'll be out before tonight. The news will be out before tonight.
Okay.
I already wrote the story before I drove over here. It's just playoff tickets. Round three playoff tickets will be on sale Thursday morning, or Thursday at noon. They are going to be a 50% increase from round two prices, which is very expensive.
That's significant.
But
it's the Western Conference Finals.
I mean, this may never happen. I said it to Ryan today at the rink. This might not happen for 20 years could go by, and there could not be another Western Conference Finals game at T-Mobile Arena, and it wouldn't even be that out of the realm of possibility. Like, that's how important, like, that's how crazy this is.
And if you're saying Jesse's pulling 20 years out of his ass, no, he's not. It was the last time the Washington Capitals made it to the Western Conference Finals was 20 years ago. Eastern Conference Finals was 20 years ago, and they just got back there yesterday.
And this isn't a team that sucked. This is a
team that's won plenty of games.
This team has been very successful, and they haven't been to the conference finals in 20 years. So enjoy it. And if you see the prices, the cheapest ticket price is $225 for a seat. That's the cheapest ticket in the house, $225, and that's from the team. It's going to be triple that when it gets on the secondary ticket market. But anyways, what kind of the crux of my story is, there have been a lot of fraudulent ticket sales outside of T-Mobile Arena. I have pictures in my story of actual fraudulent tickets that the Golden Knights showed me. They confiscated them, and they showed me. They let me take some pictures of their fraudulent tickets. Here's the easiest way to tell if it's a fake ticket. Are you holding it in your hand? Then it's fake.
Yeah.
People are selling tickets, printed out tickets, outside T-Mobile for $200. Then people are walking up and they won't take a ticket because all of their tickets are electronic. All of them. It's either through StubHub or it's through AXS or whatever the hell it's called, AXS, whatever that is. Yep. There is no physical copy of the tickets. It doesn't exist. So if you buy a ticket from someone and it is a ticket, it's fake. Yep. It can't be real.
It is a public service announcement with Jesse Granger.
Yeah, so don't buy fake tickets. If you're going to spend that much money for a game, at least get in the building. And so that's one thing I'm working on. Another thing I'm working on is a story on Marc-Andre Fleury and what it feels like to have the entire city of Pittsburgh rooting for him.
Right.
Now that his former team are eliminated. And that's about it.
So one of the things that we kind of got into today after practice was we were trying to figure out who would play the Golden Knights in a movie. So we're going to take a little bit of time to come up with at least six or seven actors, because we've got two or three right now that I think are pretty damn funny, but we're definitely going to come back with that, something light in case things don't work out in the Western Conference Finals, or just something to keep in mind in the back of your mind when we get into that slower part of the offseason. We will have who should play who, Vegas Golden Knights in the movie.
Brad Pitt as George McPhee. I'm sorry. This is an RJ story. So,
oh wow,
consider the source.
George McPhee. I like
Brad
Pitt
as George McPhee.
I'm gonna give one that I thought of after we left. Jeremy Piven. So I don't know Ari Gold from Entourage, playing Brad Hunt. And I'll give Jeremy Piven. Yeah.
It's dead on.
I mean,
he's no Sacha Baron Cohen for Marc-Andre Fleury.
No. That's I think the entire movie right there.
No, I'm convinced Marc-Andre Fleury is actually Sacha Baron Cohen in the offseason. Like, he actually is Borat. Like,
I think that's possible.
Or Jean Girard in Talladega Nights. Like, that Jean Girard in Talladega Nights, that character played by Sacha Baron Cohen, is literally Marc-Andre Fleury.
It's pretty much very accurate.
He's got the same facial hair, he's got the same accent, he's got the same mannerisms. It's him.
So we've got two. We'll get more. We heard one for Alex Tuch that you and I are both not really high on. So we'll get to that. You can follow me at Ryan Hockey Guy on Twitter. You can follow Jesse Granger at Jesse Granger _ on Twitter and social media. He's doing a lot of the Instagram story things.
Yep.
I'm not a big fan of that stuff, but that's just because I don't use Instagram very much. But that all being said, we will be back whenever your schedule permits it. My schedule permits it. It's going to be pretty busy. Maybe we can get one in mid-series, hopefully. But until next time, be sure to like, subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Just let everybody know that the Rink Rats are here and doing a good job for you. And we'll talk to you next time.